So taking a comfortable but alert posture. Giving some care to your posture. And taking some care with your posture helps you to arrive and to really be here. In a sense, maybe slightly to commit yourself to being here, as opposed to letting your thoughts carry you away. Feeling your sitting bones, your feet and your knees against the floor. And feeling your small of your back. Having a little curve there, letting your weight of your body pass through the small of your back, down near your hips. And then taking a few moments to slowly work your attention up your vertebrae. To feel your weight balance there on your vertebrae. Up through your neck, so your neck is balanced on your shoulders. And then taking a couple of deep breaths, connecting as you breathe in, relaxing, letting go as you breathe out. Letting go of your thoughts and your concerns. And then letting the body's experience of breathing, letting the physical experience of breathing fill the space of your awareness. So that you're carefully aware of breathing in and aware of breathing out. If something compelling pulls your attention away from the breath, it's not a distraction. It's simply something else to be mindful of. Hearing, itching, an ache, a thought, a feeling, an emotion. Give some priority to staying with the breath, to developing continuity of mindfulness of each breath. But if something else compelling occurs, let that become the meditation until it's passed away or it's no longer compelling. And then come back and continue developing the continuity of attention on the breath. Letting yourself relax. Soften as you breathe in and as you breathe out. And the spirit or the attitude of meditation is one of allowing yourself to be the way you are. There's no need to be bothered by anything, to measure how your practice is going. Whenever you remember, come back to the present moment, breathing consciously. Noticing where your attention is now. All you need to do is to notice, to be mindful of where you're at. No need to judge it or criticize. Noticing what your experience is. And whenever it's appropriate, resting carefully with the breath. Being with a full in-breath. Being with the transition from breathing in to breathing out. Being with the full out-breath. And being there with your attention for the transition from the out-breath to the in-breath. Remembering that if anything really strong is happening to you, restlessness or physical pain or strong emotions or strong mental concerns, remember to bring that within the field, within the light of mindfulness, recognizing that it's there, not being caught up in it. And that's the practice. So in the first 4 weeks of this five-week series, I try to lay out a description of the mindfulness practice to explain or show or instruct how it includes the full range of our human experience by talking about these four categories. There's the category of the breath, which is very central to mindfulness meditation. There's a physical experience, there's our emotional experience, and there's more our mental experience, the cognitive experience of thoughts. And in a sense, you know, maybe you can find other areas of our life, but in a sense, the idea of this mindfulness practice is that whatever we experience can be included within the field of mindfulness, within the light of awareness. And when I first realized this simple fact, I was made me very happy to realize that anything that we experience can be known mindfully, allows for the possibility of becoming very free in this world. Because if you start sensing and feeling how mindfulness of something is not being caught up in that very same thing, you can see the possibility of being free in the midst of having an experience. And when you realize that everything we can ever experience can be known in the field of mindfulness, then there's a possibility, at least in theory, of being liberated or being free or being not being caught up in whatever experience we're having in life at all, regardless of what it might be. So that's kind of that's a little bit what we're trying to point to when we give the instructions for mindfulness practice. And it can make a huge difference in a person's life to bring mindfulness. It kind of lubricates their life. It kind of creates a little bit less entanglement, less resistance, less struggle with things by simply seeing, oh, this is what's going on. Let me get to know this better. Let me study this. Let me find out. So bringing careful mindfulness to different experiences. And so, as I said in the beginning, mindfulness meditation in and of itself is not meant to create calmness or joy or bliss or great insights about your psychological life, great understandings. It's not supposed to create great states of concentration, great states of, you know, cosmic unity or anything. What it's aiming at is not any particular kind of experience. Though things happen, those kind of things might happen as a byproduct, but rather is an experience of finding freedom in the midst of whatever's happening by having this transparent or translucent presence of awareness itself that's not hooked onto anything, doesn't contract around anything. And as soon as we identify some particular state, calmness, great bliss, great union with the cosmos or whatever, as being the point of the mindfulness meditation, that's then a place where we can get caught or get attached. So we say there's no particular experience or state which is the point. So we don't rest in any one place, but rather having a state of being that's not depending on any state at all is partly what the definition of freedom is in Buddhism. And it might sound very strange, or what's the good of that, you know? Give me calm, or give me bliss, or give me rapture, or give me cosmic unity, or union, or whatever, any day. What Gil's talking about, I can't quite understand what that means, to be just kind of aware without being attached to anything. Well, maybe if you do the practice, maybe you have some sense, but it's really important to understand that in its Buddhist context, mindfulness practice is not about any particular state we can attain, but rather learning how to find our freedom in the midst of whatever's happening by simply seeing it clearly. Oh, this is what's happening. Now, what often people will ask after they do some mindfulness practice for some while is, this is all very good for doing on the meditation cushion or in my chair, but what about bringing it into my daily life? And this is a very, very important question. I'm always delighted when students ask. And unfortunately, I don't have very good answers. Partly because daily life is so huge and so vast. But simplistically, the mindfulness practice off the cushion is the same as on the cushion. That our mind is not any different in meditation as it is in going about daily life. And we can often find a kind of ability to be freer, more at ease, less resisting, less entangled with our experience. We can find it easier sometimes in the meditation cushion. And then there's often a natural desire to want to live with that kind of integrity in our daily life also. So that, because we see there's a huge difference between the kind of freedom I can discover, the ease I can discover, the lack of entanglement I can discover in meditation, maybe I can also begin finding ways to live my life that way. Because you notice when you get up from your meditation in the morning, you start, you know, you get ready for work, and before you know it, you're kind of frantic and running around, and, you know, there's never enough time for anything, and we're rushed, you know, and we're completely entangled, and then our boss says this to us, and our partner says that to us, and then we're furious in one hand and elated in the other, and this and that, and you know, life just becomes a huge, what? The Buddhist word is samsara. And samsara is an interesting word because it means rounds of being caught up. It's kind of like a treadmill or something. We get caught up in one thing, and that almost stimulates or encourages us to get caught up in something again, something else. And that, and then because we're so caught up in that, that encourages us to get attached to something else. So here I am sitting quietly. I get up out of my morning meditation. I'm quite calm. And then I remember that I have to be at work a half an hour early. And then you get kind of contracted. And then that contraction then feeds into being contracted around having breakfast because they start eating faster because you have to get out of the house faster. And then you're a little bit, you know, but you want to linger a little bit over that wonderful aroma of coffee. And so you kind of feel a struggle between lingering over the aroma of coffee and getting to work, you know, half an hour early, whatever. And then you're a little bit late, and then you're upset about being late. And then you're upset about being late, and then you kind of start off the day being upset with yourself, why you don't have more better discipline. And so the story goes, right? That's samsara. That's the wheels of being caught up, to how one thing leads to another, and it becomes, goes around and around and around and around. And nirvana, in a sense, is not so much separate from that in Buddhism, the Buddhist idea of nirvana, but it's ending, it's stopping the caught upness in the midst of that. So we're no longer caught by things. And so we can wisely then go on to the next thing. So one simple definition of a nirvana is a non-caught upness. What do you think of that? So a lot of people then will ask, how can I do this in my daily life? And it's a natural thing to want to do, how to have this integrity or this non-caught upness in daily life, because daily life is not really radically, not so different from meditation. So there's a few things about to be said about that. The expression many people have is, how can I integrate this practice in my daily life? What some people don't realize, we'll ask that question without having a practice to integrate. So, you know, they want to have it all without having to do the spiritual work, without doing the training. You know, it's really powerful and useful to sit every day and use that as a foundation, that strength of mindfulness, the strength of clarity, of presence that comes with that, and use and have that as a basis for learning how to do it in daily life. If you don't have that as a basis, it's very hard then to kind of learn how to do it in daily life. So, we can say that there's two major ways that a person can develop the practice after taking an introductory course like this. One way is by really focusing on the sitting practice and really developing it so it becomes really strong and a powerful resource for us in our life. And that means sitting every day. Some people like to sit twice a day. It can be sitting for 20 minutes, half an hour, an hour. It's something that works for your daily kind of life you live. If you have some unrealistically high goal of sitting an hour every day, and just it's too difficult, and then you don't sit because the length of time is unrealistic, that's, you know, you should do something that's realistic. But find something that works and it feels nice for you. The other thing that can be done to strengthen the mindfulness practice is to sit with other people, to find a sitting group and go once a week or occasionally. It can infuse a tremendous amount of inspiration, of support, of learning by sitting with other people. And we have our sitting groups here Mondays and Thursdays. There's other sitting groups around. There's both Vipassana groups like we are, and also there's Zen groups, various Zen groups around. And for the most part, the Zen practice and the Vipassana practice is compatible enough that it's nice, just nice to go sit with people, to have sitting groups to sit with. But another way to develop the meditation practice is by going on retreats. And retreat practice is a very powerful way and useful way, and one really a delightful way, though sometimes challenging way, to develop and continue to cultivate the strength of bringing mindfulness and clarity to our life as it is. And retreat means going one-day retreat, which means meditating all day. But the way meditation works on a retreat is we alternate between a period of sitting meditation with an equal period length of time of walking meditation. So you're not always just sitting down. And walking meditation is a powerful, wonderful practice also. And sometimes there's a kind of confrontation with oneself and with one's practice that happens with much greater honesty and integrity in the context of a longer retreat than can happen as we just sit at home for half an hour each day. The intensity or the fullness, the full engagement without any distractions for a whole day or for a whole week or for 10 days provides tremendous opportunities for developing the practice, for learning about oneself, getting insight and all kinds of things. So that's one whole way to develop the practice, is to develop, really cultivate the meditation practice. The other way is to, maybe not so much do that, to some degree, but the other way is to do it in daily life, which I started talking about. Finding ways to start cultivating mindfulness, awareness, noticing what's happening as you go through your life. It's quite easy to go through a few hours or a whole day caught up in whatever we're caught up with and not really step back and really be clearly aware, oh, this is what's happening now. You know, we're angry, we're furious and upset, or we're stressed, or we're in a hurry. And we're so caught up in being in a hurry, we don't know we're in a hurry. We don't know it. We might know it if someone asks us, but we don't really know it with a kind of clear, stable presence. Oh, this is what's going on in the present moment. So how to kind of cultivate more of this kind of awareness, more presence in daily life, so to counteract the tendencies to get caught up. One way is just to appreciate the importance of it, of doing that, and the opportunities and possibilities of doing that. The first time I saw the possibilities of it, maybe it wasn't exactly maybe a good example to share with you, but just because it was my first kind of great understanding of its power. I had done this practice, and I was introduced to this meditation practice not in the way you are, kind of week by week in a class, but rather by doing a 10-week meditation retreat in Thailand. So pretty intensive. And after about 9 weeks of that, right near the end, I was invited by the abbot of this monastery to go into Bangkok to attend a funeral ceremony for a very high-level general in the army. And the funeral ceremony was rather gaudy and rather involved, and there were speeches and ceremonies all in languages I couldn't understand. And so I was very bored. You know, I've been sitting in my little room, my little cabin. It was about 8 by 8 or something, and no, you know, just wooden little hut, and there's no decorations and no books and nothing's happening there. And it was so incredibly more interesting than in this very elaborate temple with flowers and people and all this stuff. And so I was kind of bored. And at some point I noticed that I didn't have to be bored. Instead of being bored, which was kind of a stance I kind of took, I could just start being mindful of what was going on. And I started just sitting there and I got, you know, mindful. It wasn't like I was curious what was going on, kind of like an anthropologist. It was like hearing, oh, there's that boredom, recognizing the boredom. Where do I feel the boredom in the body? Oh, it's somewhere in my body and feeling, oh, it went away. Oh, now there's, you know, now I'm feeling my breath. Oh, that's interesting. My breath is kind of tight, and just I'll be with the tightness. And what's that like? Oh, I can be with the tightness. It's uncomfortable, but I can be with discomfort. It's okay. And oh, and now it's relaxed, and I'm breathing more fully. And now someone's, you know, playing this god-awful music. Oh, judgment. I'm judging now. Judging. Isn't that interesting? Judging. And it's very different to notice that you're judging. It is to kind of continue on the train of thought that says, oh, that god-awful music, how can they choose this for a funeral? And, you know, and I got to talk to the director of the temple. And, you know, it's a lot different. Just, oh, I'm judging. Oh, and then I'm discouraged because I shouldn't be judging, I think. Oh, discouragement. I notice my discouragement. Oh, and now there's some more noise outside, hearing. And just doing this very, very simple kind of mindfulness. And pretty soon, my boredom vanished, and it got very interesting. I felt very present and very alive, and kind of free in the midst of it. So, or if you find yourself being, you know, really confused in a situation at work or with a relationship, whatever, and things are not going right, you don't know how to make them, you know, go right, you're feeling terrible, and you feel lost, and you always have an option, something you can do. And you can always pay attention, as opposed to figure out what to do, as opposed to fix it. So take a few moments, take a minute. Okay, what's going on here? I'm upset, I'm confused, I don't know what to do, people are yelling at me. Oh, listening to that. Yelling, you're yelling, hearing. This is interesting. And sometimes we should be anthropologists. Wow. He's yelling at me. I wonder what anthropological phenomena this is. But you can always do something at situations that seem impossible, totally impossible. You can always start just noticing what's going on. And it can actually give this person a little bit of sense of control sometimes in a situation that seems out of control. Gary Snyder has this wonderful passage where he says, "All of us are apprenticed to the same teacher that the religious institutions originally worked with, namely reality. Reality, insight says, master the 24 hours. Do it well without self-pity. It is as hard to get the children herded into the carpool and down the road to the bus as it is to chant scriptures in the Buddha hall, in the temple on a cold morning. One move is not better than the other. Each can be quite boring, and they both have the virtuous quality of repetition. Repetition and ritual and their good results come in many forms. Changing the filter, wiping noses, going to meetings, picking up around the house, washing dishes, checking the dipstick. Don't let yourself think that these are distracting you from your more serious pursuits. Such a round of chores is not a set of difficulties we hope to escape from, so that we may do our practice, which will put us on a path. It is our path." So the recognition that the path of becoming free is found in the midst of our life as it is. Wiping noses, checking a dipstick, washing dishes, going shopping, doing our chores, doing our work, being in relationships, doing whatever we have to do. That it's actually possible to make that a spiritual path, a spiritual practice, by simply bringing mindfulness and awareness to it. And that's a radical thing to say, because many people who pursue spiritual life are looking for something which is different than whatever their daily life is like. And Buddhist spirituality is about discovering the freedom that's possible here. Now, there are some pragmatic concerns about all this, and that is, to simply kind of bring mindfulness sometimes is not enough. The Buddhist tradition, the religious tradition, recognizes that what's very supportive for developing the freedom of a mindful life, freedom in the midst of our life, unconditioned freedom that doesn't get entangled in any way, there are various things we can actually do behaviorally that actually supports that becoming a realistic possibility for us. And so one of the things that teachers in Southeast Asia repeat over and over and over again is it's very difficult to support a Buddhist spiritual life, a life of bringing careful, intimate mindfulness, waking up, unless the person's ethical. If you are lying to people, if you're stealing, or if you're harming other people, it's very hard to develop mindfulness. It isn't like this is like a more moralistic thing, like there's God watching over you saying, you know. It's just a matter of fact that it's very difficult part of what mindfulness is doing is establishing a unity of all the fragmented parts of ourselves. So we're not at odds with ourselves. Not, you know, in two different places. Not separated from ourselves. Not separated from people around us. It's very difficult to lie and stay whole within oneself. The state of lying, the motivation to lie, the place, the source within us that wants to lie, is a place that is fragmented. We're not really complete within ourselves when we lie. When we're harming other people and stealing from other people, we have to shut down part of ourselves in order to do those things. Shut down a certain kind of sensitivity of ourselves and the other people and our integrity and their integrity in order to successfully be able to pull out those kinds of transgressions. So if the point of the practice is to become whole, not to be fragmented, and if breaking the precepts, living unethically, can only be done if we're fragmented, we understand how important ethical life is to live a life of freedom. Does that make sense? So one of the things to reflect on if you want to integrate the practice in daily life, I mean, I don't believe that the people here in this room steal and lie, you know, really grossly, and you know, and are killing people. But we all do, including myself, in ways that are very subtle. We exaggerate, which is a kind of a lying. I went to the best restaurant in Palo Alto yesterday. That's, you know, how true is that? Yeah. It's kind of like exaggeration. And some of us speak that way all the time. We exaggerate everything because, you know why? Because it ties to us as my identity. If I went to the best restaurant, that must mean I'm kind of special, or you get kind of juice or kind of attention or something. But a lying of exaggeration also fragments us because it's not really true. What's true, what's deepest within us. Or we steal in subtle ways. The Buddhist term for stealing is taking what is not given. Have you interrupted anybody when they're speaking to you? That's kind of taking something which is not given, taking their attention. So we can start looking at more subtle ways of ethics, not just simply the grosser ways we think of. And as we look at the greater subtlety, without any guilt, without any shame, without any blame, because Buddhism doesn't need that, but just looking at it honestly, we get a better and better sense of how to live in a life of integrity, of living a life that's more mindfully sensitive and more open to the world around us. So ethics become an important way of integrating the practice in daily life. And so there are many ways, actually, of starting to bring mindfulness, doing mindfulness practice in our daily activities as we go about. They can be as simple as if you come to a red light and you're driving, and you have 30 seconds there or a minute there or however long, rather than be impatient and tap your hand on the steering wheel or pull out your hair or whatever we do, it's just kind of sit down and say, okay, I'm going to just be mindful of my breath a little bit. Just be here with myself. Just notice how I'm feeling. And take those 30 seconds to be mindful. And to find various times during the day to do that. If you're standing in the supermarket and there's a line of people in front of you, rather than being impatient or looking at the magazines or judging all the people around you and how could they bought that, and is just stand there and quietly stand there and do standing meditation. Just do standing, mindful of your feeling, mindful of judging, mindful of whatever, impatience, and mindful. Oh, be mindful rather than being caught up in those things. Some people will have cues throughout the day that reminds them to take a moment to check in what's actually happening right now. Some people like to do it with a telephone. If the telephone rings, let it ring 3 times before you answer it, or 4 times. And during those rings, stop what you're doing, because you're going to stop what you're doing anyway to answer the phone. So stop what you're doing and just breathe 2 or 3 times, just to check in where you're at. What I did for a long time was I used doorways, moving through a door, as a cue for waking up to paying attention. So I would walk through, because it kind of made sense, because I'd walk through a door, it's kind of like I was going into a new place, new area. And so going through a new place, it's kind of nice to be awake and be present for it. So, you know, that's another, you can use doors as cues. When you go through a door, you stop and stop literally, but just use that as a reminder to pay attention to what's happening. What are you feeling? What are you thinking? What's going on with you, with your body? And some people are very creative at what they choose. What some people will do is they'll choose a theme for a week and cultivate awareness around that particular theme. So it can be as simple as light switches. Whenever you turn on and off a light, you're going to become mindful of what's going on for you at that moment or those minute or that time. And so you go through that week and light switches become your cue, your spiritual mentor. And then the next week you choose washing dishes, or the next week you choose driving, just the whole time you're driving, or the next week you choose walking from your car in this parking lot to the place where you work. Or you begin exploring different places, and if you do that over time, you actually start doing that in a lot of different areas of your life, and you start developing a different kind of sensitivity, a different presence, and you're less likely to be caught up in your life and more actually living it fully and mindfully. Another thing that I was told today, that people only remember three things in a lecture. So maybe I just stop. not run on and on.
But you don't know which three things.
So maybe just go on and on, and you'll pick the three things that are important for you. Well, I'll say this then. Another thing which is extremely useful for helping to bring mindfulness in daily life is to develop a habit of checking in with the body, to find out what's going on with your body, to kind of live in your body, feeling the contractions, the tightness, the openness, the joy in your body. The body is a wonderful door into telling thoughts, all these different things. And by just dropping into the physicality of our body, we often will find out earlier what's going on with us than we did if we just kind of go through our life kind of without paying attention. The body is a very useful place to cultivate this integration practice. So there's many, many things that can be done. And it brings actually a kind of joy to life, to have mindfulness be part of it. It's a funny kind of joy. I remember there was a woman who came to me and said how much she appreciated and enjoyed how much joy she got from the mindfulness practice, even when she was feeling crummy. And the point she was trying to make was she felt actually there was some kind of satisfaction in being present for being crummy than it was to numb out. And she was beginning to appreciate that kind of satisfaction of presence as opposed to checking out or running away or attacking it or whatever. And this joy of bringing present is a really wonderful thing. So it can be, there's a whole many, many things can be said about this. But maybe that's enough basically for tonight. A couple of, one thing I'd like to say kind of as a summing up. It's very important when we do mindfulness, either as a practice in daily life or as a meditation practice, not to do it idealistically, but rather to do it, because then we measure ourselves in all kinds of ways about some ideal of what it's supposed to look like. Mindfulness practice is about recognizing and being present in a non-judgmental way for who we actually are, not who we ideally should be. It's very important not to be idealistic. And in that spirit, I want to read this quote. A priest of the Greek Orthodox Church, Father Thomas Hopko, wrote the following about a monk he met on Mount Athos. He was in a very bad state, very dark, very bitter, very angry. When asked what was the matter, he said, "Look at me. I've been here for 38 years, and I've not yet attained pure prayer. And this other fellow in the pilgrimage was saying how sad he thought this was. Another man present said, "It's a sad story, all right, but the sadness consists in the fact that after 38 years in the monastery, he's still interested in pure prayer." You shouldn't have such a pure idea of what mindfulness or meditation or liberation is. It's really about meeting ourselves in our actual, how we actually are, with acceptance and allowing and kind of a compassion for ourselves. It's very hard and difficult to be a human being. I think for anybody on the planet, but sometimes I wonder if it's more difficult for us here in Palo Alto. There's tremendous amount of suffering, and everybody's struggling, everybody's trying very hard, everybody's trying to cope probably phenomenally well given all the difficulties. And I think it's very important to have a lot of compassion for oneself and for yourself, and not to judge yourself and criticize oneself and feel ashamed of oneself or feel one's unworthy in the midst of the tremendous difficulty that society puts on us as we live here. And the practice is really a practice of acceptance, of, I would say, almost a kind of love, where we kind of allow ourselves and love ourselves, love life, in a kind of open-handed way, accepting way, for all its limitations, all the struggles, all our difficulties and all our problems. And it's a beautiful thing. So maybe that's enough of my speaking. Maybe if you have one or two questions, we can take them and then we'll sit to end the evening. Anything at all about the instructions, about the practice? I'm pretty sure that I haven't clarified everything. I guess I have. So let's sit then. So you might in this short sitting we're going to do something which is not really mindfulness, but a little maybe trick. And that is, assume as you're sitting here, as you sit still and don't move and allow for whatever is going to happen, assume that whatever occurs is okay. But all you have to do is to be present for it, to recognize it. There's nothing which is not okay that happens. Simply recognize what is going on, staying in the present moment. And as a way of helping you stay present, you can connect with the breath. So for those of you who came to the full 5 weeks of the series, I hope that this was useful. And for those of you who came just for parts of it, I hope the parts were useful. A few announcements to say. One is that as we come to the end of this 5 week series, and also as we kind of go back to our regular schedule, that all the teachings, all the things that we do in our meditation community here, we try the best we can to offer them as freely as we can, to offer them so that money is not an issue in terms of access and availability. And so we do it on a donation basis. And so there's two baskets out in the hallway. And one basket says rent on it. It says rent. And that's to help pay for this room. And if everybody put in a dollar, that would cover more, you know, the rent for the room and our other expenses that we have. And then the other basket says teacher on it, and you're welcome to make a donation to me. This tradition is a little bit unusual in that the teachers try very hard to teach only by doing things through donations, which is not always so very well understood or appreciated here in America, how that works, or the associations of what, you know, a basket is kind of sometimes a little bit odd in our culture. But it's a tradition coming from Asia, and it's supposed to be a dignified tradition. And if you would like to make a donation to help support, make it possible for me or the other teachers in other situations to be able to continue offering teachings and classes and retreats and all the things that we do, meeting with students, that the basket is there for that kind of support if you'd like. And if you don't like to, you don't have to. Next Thursday, we meet every Thursday here, and once the introductory course is over, we revert to our regular Thursday schedule, which is at 7 o'clock we start with a half an hour meditation period, and I might do a little bit, for one or two minutes, a little bit of instructions to start off in case there's new people, and then we sit in silence for half an hour. And then I'll give a talk, or we'll have some discussion, or answer questions until about 8:15. And then, I'm caught up in my discussion. we sit from 8:15 to 8:30. So it's a very nice event. And Thursdays is smaller than Monday meetings. Which Monday we sit for 45 minutes, and we first sit together. And it's nice. Thursday's nice because of a smaller number of people, and there's more chance for discussion and questions than on Monday. And also, I try to gear the Thursday discussion more to issues that are more directly related to the meditation practice and more kind of people newer to the practice. Whereas on Monday, the talk can be almost anything that's remotely connected. And also, in the weeks, the first couple of weeks or so, 2 or 3 weeks after the introductory course, I kind of pretend the introductory course just continuing, because there's a lot more I can say, kind of basic introduction. So the next few talks, Thursdays, if you want, you could to come. I'll just kind of continue on some of the things we've been talking about, some of the basic instructions, kind of things. Yes?
When will there be another introductory course?
The next one starts February 12th. So, yes?
Is there an intermediate course?
Maybe this is it, because there's all these people here who've been to the introductory course before, a couple of times even. So either I'm not teaching very well, or it functions as the beginning, intermediate, and advanced course.
You have to remember three things each time.
Three times, yeah. Just remember different things. When you remember three different things, it's the intermediate course. But you know, the one way to kind of develop and deepen the practice and get more instructions is come Monday, come on Thursday's evenings, and to come on one-day retreats, one day and longer retreats. Oh, the next one-day retreat is not this Saturday, but the Saturday after next, which is the 8th, I guess. And it's going to be in this room here, in this building, from 9 to 4:30. And if those of you have never done the one-day sitting, you're welcome to come for half the day. It's probably best to come for the morning, since I do give instructions through the day, and it's somewhat progressive. Come a little bit before 9 o'clock, and it's pretty much silent. And we stop for lunch, so bring a bag lunch if you want to have a lunch. Okay? So, thank you all.
One day, how long are the sessions?
Oh, they're about 35 minutes each. 35 minutes of sitting and 35 minutes of walking. And I give some instructions as we go along. And I'm also available during the walking time to answer questions, or if anybody has questions about the practice or the instructions, that I'm very available during that time to discuss things. Yes? We do a different practice in our tradition. That's a different kind of meditation practice, a different kind of practice that that is complementary to mindfulness, and it's called loving kindness practice. It's a practice of bringing kindness or loving or goodwill. It's a beautiful practice, and it complements mindfulness very well. And in January, Anna Douglas, who's one of the teachers at Spirit Rock, is going to come down here and do at St. Mark's, but in end of January, do a day on loving kindness meditation for us. In the brochure, it says it's Guy Armstrong is doing it. But his schedule changed and he couldn't do it, and so Anna's going to do it instead. And then in March, I'm going to do a 5-week introductory class on loving kindness meditation, like I've done in the past. Thursday at from 5:30 to 6:30 in the evening. I call it the Vipassana happy hour. But it's not until March. Mindfulness is simply recognizing, being aware of what's happening in the present moment. That's all it is. I mean, it's very simple and matter of fact. Loving kindness is actually an intentional practice where you kind of find within you some intention of goodwill, of friendliness, of loving kindness to yourself, to someone else, and then cultivate that intention. And it tends to bring, various things tend to happen, but one of the things that can happen is you actually feel a lot more loving and accepting and friendly towards yourself and your experience and the world around you. And it's a very it's kind of healing practice of sorts. Whereas mindfulness is also healing, but mindfulness is ruthless. It just, you know, whatever comes up, you're aware of. But loving kindness is actually much more of a loving practice. And some people, loving kindness practice is a better practice for them than mindfulness. And it's a beautiful thing, and it's part of our tradition, and some people like to do it a lot. So I don't know if that's I don't know if that explains much, but come and try it. Okay, thank you.